This is Radio Labour.
Hello, I'm Marc Boulanger. Poverty in the world is a crucial issue for labor unions. According to the United Nations, 22,000 children die every day because of poverty. Nearly half of the world's population, more than 3 billion people, live on less than $2 a day. Access to food, water, and shelter is a daily struggle for billions of people around the world. Most of these people are in the global south. Just recently, the Trades Union Congress in the UK, the TUC, sponsored a seminar about poverty in the global south. The seminar included discussion that just maybe there is a fundamental problem with how poverty in the global south is addressed. It may be that our economic system, capitalism, cannot solve the problem of global poverty and, in fact, may be a cause of poverty. That is the argument of Ben Selwyn, a professor of international relations at the University of Sussex in the UK. Dr. Selwyn was one of the speakers at the seminar about global poverty organized by the TUC. He has recently published a book entitled The Global Development Crisis. I asked Dr. Selwyn, what alternatives could there be to the current way we are addressing poverty, especially in the global south?
Thanks, Mark, for the question. It's a very important one. Basically, the whole discourse of development, whether it's carried out by the World Bank or by states, state leaders, or by big businesses, creates a juxtaposition. On one hand, they talk about poverty being a result of exclusion from capitalism. On the other hand, they talk about poverty alleviation being a product of inclusion into capitalism. So if you look at the World Bank's report, Globalization, Growth and Poverty, Building an Inclusive World Economy, they have this whole narrative that the fastest growing countries such as China and India have been integrated more into the world economy than slower growing countries. And so the solution is further integration. There is a major problem with this whole way of thinking, because what it does is it poses capitalism as the solution to poverty alleviation. And it looks at all kinds of non-capitalist spheres of life as the cause or causes of poverty. And the reality is, when you look around the world, you can see quite clearly, if you get rid of this discourse, that forms of capitalist production and integration are themselves causes of poverty. I mean, if you look at these sweatshops in places like Cambodia, Bangladesh, and China, these are sweatshops that people like Jeffrey Sachs, the UN Millennium Goals director, he lauds them. He says rich world protesters should be supporting these kinds of sweatshops because they are the first rung on a ladder out of poverty. So he uses these sweatshops as an example of inclusion to poverty alleviation. But the fact is, these sweatshops are actually creating poverty. I mean, no one would argue that the workers in the sweatshops, the women in the sweatshops, places like Cambodia and Vietnam, and Bangladesh, are not experiencing an extreme labor regime, extremely oppressive conditions, extreme levels of exploitation, and poverty. You know, you can look at, again and again, there's research shown that workers in the export processing zones, again, very highly integrated into global capitalism, basically don't earn enough to fulfill their lives. So that my point is, capitalism itself is generative of poverty, just at the same time as it's generative of immense wealth. And in fact, my argument is the immense wealth of capitalism is based on the poverty of the many, the poverty of the world's laboring classes.
So what can labor unions and their members do to help alleviate poverty in developing countries?
Well, again, I do have some ideas. And my argument, again, is that trade unions are a very important organization for laboring classes. And I'll talk about how important they are in a second. But it is also the case that trade unions often see themselves as secondary to the so-called wealth creators, the advanced entrepreneurs or the state bureaucrats who bring in investment and direct resources and so on. And what this means is trade unions fall into a concept of national development, and they argue that, yes, we need to ameliorate the conditions of our workers and our members, but we don't want to do it too fast. So our rises in pay, if that happens, should lag behind productivity. We should support investment. We shouldn't demand too much. And my argument is that this, again, falls into the concept of national development, falls into the idea that capitalism is the source of well-being for labour, when in fact national development and capitalism are the source of labour's poverty. So trade unions can actually take a very different way of approaching poverty, and that is to strike and to fight for their rights and for ameliorations in their conditions in a much more aggressive way. And I argue that they should conceive development not in national terms or in terms of integration into global capitalism, but in terms of labour-centred development, seeing labourers and labouring class organisations as the prime movers in development. There are many examples of this. So, for example, if you look at the 1970s and 1980s, the big transformations in the global south in places like Brazil, South Korea, South Africa, where dictatorial or apartheid regimes were overthrown, where labor rights were instituted, these were brought about not by entrepreneurs, not by states, but by mass labor struggles, by huge social movement unions. And this is one example, or three examples, of labor-centered development. And in the contemporary period, we have numerous examples of that that I point out in my book. So, for example, if you go to Brazil, you've got the landless laborers movement, the Movimento dos Trabalhadores Sem Terra, and they have invaded land, they've broken property rights, they've broken the law, they've taken over land, and over the last 30 years they've settled something like over 250,000 families on land. So they've created livelihoods for close to a million people. That is a major example of labour-centred development, where labouring classes take development into their own hands, disregarding the cries of the entrepreneurs and the state to observe the law and actually move ahead. We'll be right back.